One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
People have told stories of the strange and supernatural for centuries. Tales of the restless dead return to haunt the living. Whispers of damned souls doing the devil's bidding on Earth. Rumors of inhuman things that still hunt the old forests, untouched by the glare of modern life. There may be more to these stories than you could ever imagine. Join us tonight as we delve into the deeper truth inside these mysteries.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode. Again, apologise for delaying episodes. Everything's still up in the air at this end. Obviously, Finch is having a baby soon, so there's things going on there, and getting together is a bit difficult at the moment with, you know, lockdown, essentially, and all that stuff. So, sorry for the delay. But we're here now. Right, today, exciting episode, I think. We've got Embroswin coming on. Now, that's his soul name. He gets into a little bit of that today. Something I've not really come across before, so that was interesting. Now, he's got a book coming out called A Demon Hunter, and that's what he is, a demon hunter. But it's coming out in May. So today, we sort of focused on a little bit of things around him and what's been going on, rather than the book. What we're going to do is we're going to do a part two, where we basically focus on the book itself. But you can still pre-order the book now. It comes out in May. But like I say, we'll have getting back on in a few weeks' time, a little bit closer to when the book comes out, and, you know, give you a little bit more detail about what's actually in the book, how he became a demon hunter. Again, the first part of the book is all about that, and it's an interesting story in itself. I mean, there's elves in it and all sorts of stuff. So, you know, you'll probably find it interesting. But we'll get into the book itself at a later date. This is just a little bit of background, if you like. He did have parrots in the background, so you'll hear them from occasion. But, you know, adds to the ambience, really. It was too early in the morning for him, because obviously recording in the States and the UK, to let his parrots outside. So he had to have the parrots in there. But, you know, like I say, really didn't cause too much bother. But in case you're wondering what that squawking is in the background, that's what it is. It's not me having a curry last night. So I'm going to show, and then I'll speak to you at the end. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me tonight. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, and I think this is going to be a very interesting and thought-provoking interview. So, your name, Embroswin, this is a soul name, okay? And it's something that I've not run across before, so I wanted you to explain a little bit about what goes into one of those.
Sure, well, a soul name, and my full soul name would be Embroswin Toscavel. And each one of those sound syllables, M, Bros, Win, Tos, Ku, Vel, each one has a sound that resonates with you and helps unleash your own personal abilities and powers. Most things you may not have been aware of, many things you would. And once you hear that name, and once it's your name, and once you say it aloud or hear other people say it aloud, it brings out those powers and abilities in you that may have been lying dormant in you for all of your life. And as I mentioned, I think I have done this for hundreds and hundreds of people over the years, where I've discovered their soul name and the meanings of the sounds for them. And it just changes their life, just knowing their soul name and being able to say it, and bringing out these latent abilities and powers, or even just in their life, knowing what powers and abilities to emphasize to have the most success and happiness in their life.
Yeah. Can you obviously can you break one of the syllables down in your name and give me an example of what it means and how you came to take it on?
Sure, just a second. I'll get something for you. I know if we're on just an audio that you can't see this, but my wife made this up for me. And this is takes my name and says what the different sounds mean. So M means ability to use the psyche and the mind together. Bros is the ability to focus energy explosively, accomplishing much in less time. The power of fire energy. Win is the power to create change suddenly. Taz is the power of the five-star balance, impish playfulness, steadfast dependability, profound spirituality, psychic insight, and the ability to call forth forces beyond oneself. Ku is the fire within, the ability to inspire or singe the hearts of others by the energy which permeates from your words, voice, demeanor, and energy essence. And Del is the power to transform the ordinary to the extraordinary, from self to others to objects once mundane. Vel calls forth the best within and orchestrates all to the greatness that can be. So that's my name. Everybody's name is different, and all the different abilities and powers that people have are different as well.
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, we're given a name by, you know, obviously our parents in most cases, and we sort of just go through life with that name and we don't really, you know, give much thought to it. And it's, you know, going back into the I was talking to someone the other day, I was having a bit of a laugh actually about names, because we had obviously in England we have like Cooper, things like this, where the name relates to the job that they used to do. Okay, so obviously it's like a barrel maker, yeah, Cooper. So you get these names associated to your trade, yeah. So you might get carpenter, for instance, you know what I mean, this sort of thing. And I think what you're saying is a little bit closer to what the ancients probably, the names the ancients would have had, rather than just you know, just giving a name after something that happened. The name that we was laughing about was his cock.
Funny name.
Yeah, so we was having a laugh.
That is my name for sure. That was my name.
We're saying how did his ancestors get that name? You know what I mean? Did he have a, you know? And they just said, "Have you seen his?" But anyway, so yeah, getting off subject there, but I get it. So how did you, you know, come to pick these things? Are these given to you, or did you choose them yourself, or
neither one actually? In my understanding of the whole plan of everything, before we came into this life, we lived in a premortal existence. And before we came down into this earth, we had into a physical body that we're in now, we had the opportunity to gather to us things that we thought would help us in our lives. And our soul name is something that's existed for all of that pre-existence time, however long it was, thousands of years, tens of thousands of years. So it's the essence of our soul, which is why it's called the soul name. And so these are ancient abilities and powers that are the essence of who we are and what we can do in this life. And that's why they're a great power. And I discover soul names on a psychic basis. So for instance, if someone wants me to discover their soul name, they would send me a picture. So that allows me to tune into their aura. And then once I can tune into their aura, I can actually feel and understand and hear their soul name in my mind. I can actually hear it as almost like a telepathic thought in my mind, each sound, and then I have to psychically discover what those sounds mean. And that I can only do because they sent me their picture. If they didn't send me their picture, I couldn't do that. But when they send me their picture, I'm able to tune into that little tendrils of their aura. Even if you're in England and I'm in the western part of the United States, the essence of people's aura is everywhere. And I can tune into that little bit because I have your picture, and I can find out what the meanings of those sounds in your name are.
Interesting. I might give it a go. So when you get these powers from these words, then obviously you get these abilities, you know, these things. So how did you recognize that you had these abilities?
Well, it's once you hear your soul name, oftentimes you'll hear something in your soul name and just go, oh yeah, I know I do that. You just didn't realize that that was supposed to be something that was meant to be very strong in your life. Maybe it was just something that you just casually thought of and you didn't really think of it as some special ability of yours. But once you get your soul name, you begin to focus then on that. And you also can find areas that perhaps you have a weakness in. Maybe, for instance, part of your name says that you have psychic ability. And you say, well, I've never had psychic ability. And so why is that in my soul name? I don't have psychic ability. But what you can do, let's say, for instance, that in your case, that psychic ability was the word Ars, just Ars. And that was part of your soul name, just a little sound in your soul name. But that sound represented bringing out your psychic abilities. And you thought, well, I've never had psychic abilities. Look yourself in the mirror, say your soul name aloud while you're looking yourself in the mirror multiple times, and then focus on that part, Ars, 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 while you're looking at yourself in the mirror. And that triggers that part of your soul name to really activate. And you can do that as many times as you want. You can do it while you're driving in the car. It's best if you do it looking at yourself in front of the mirror, but you can do it laying in your bed, driving your car, walking on the street. But you say it aloud. You always say it three times at least. You can say it more. And that will start calling out that ability. And it could be any ability, but I'm just focusing on psychic ability, because at that point, there's a lot of people who would love to have psychic abilities. And they're there. They're available for everyone. One of my books that was a bestseller when it first came out is How to Unleash Your Psychic Abilities. It's called Unleash Your Psychic Abilities. And it talks about 17 different psychic abilities and specific things you can do to unleash that psychic ability if that's one that you're interested or called to. If that's a part of your soul name as well, it's just going to happen quicker and more powerfully.
Yeah. Okay, so demons then. Obviously, the word itself conjures up a lot of different things for a lot of different folks. All different cultures. And so what would you say your understanding is of a demon? And, you know, can you describe it to us as best as you can? I know it's...
Well, it's quite different in the reality of what demons are than what is depicted in any media, from movies to books to whatever. It's kind of humorous for me when I read and see the depictions of demons. They are very demonic and evil, for sure, but they can also be demons that are not that way, that don't actually like being demons, don't want to be demons. But the world that we live in is far bigger than people realize, and it's a multidimensional world. And to make it, to explain it in a, it's a very big picture to try to explain, but let's just start with dimensions. The earth we live on is part of, in the universe, we see all the planets and everything that we can see looking at our telescopes is what is called the first dimension. And the first dimension, it doesn't matter whether it's Earth or some other planet that you're on, in the first dimension, the beings that came to the first dimension when they originally were here were very physical in their nature. Elephants, humans, strong. Physicality was an important part of anyone who's on the first dimension. Now, they may have evolved over the years and become much less physical and much more mental or psychic, but physical is what they started with. The second dimension, just the opposite. Everything that you can imagine that's any kind of mythical or legendary creature that people think of as fantasy, like dragons or elves or those type of things, they exist for real in the second dimension. The second dimension, other than things like dragons and ogres, those are like two exceptions, but almost every other creature in the second dimension is very magical in nature, or either has innate magical abilities or has magic that they're very adept at. And that's that dimension's special distinction, where ours is physicality, theirs is magic. The third dimension is the dimension of demons. And not a very nice place, very inhospitable. People's pictures of hell with fire and burning, well, that's not that far off, other than it's just a very hot, where the rest of the dimensions have, you know, innumerable planets in them. The third dimension has a single planet, that's the demon's planet, and it's very hot, it's very unpleasant in most places, not everywhere. But what people would find interesting, I think, about demons is, first of all, They can look, their typical picture of a demon as some red guy with horns and a tail and a pitchfork, not at all. I've never seen a demon like that, and I've seen thousands of demons. They like to dress very, very eccentrically. to give you an example, the very first demon I mentioned in my book, Demon Hunter, which will be coming out on May 18th. And the first demon that I mentioned there, when I first encountered this fellow, his name was Gilmore. He was dressed, the only thing he had on was a lime green Speedo swimsuit and suspenders. That was his dress. And then you may find another demon who's dressed, he looks like an accountant. You think, wow, he would fit right in going as an accountant at some corporation. And they just dress, that's part of their persona. They like to just dress really odd in most cases. Many cases you would not even recognize a demon, because if it's a guy who looks like the corporate accountant, he would just look like a normal person. And the other cases, they look very ferocious. And there's another fellow in the book, Ugar, and he's huge, big, strong, ugly, pus coming out of his face. That's the look he likes. They could make their look whatever they want it to be. That's the look Ugar likes. So demons interface with our world. They're invisible to most people in this world, but if you're strongly psychic, you can see demons. But most people, 99.5% of the people, will not be able to see a demon if they're standing right next to them. On the second and the third dimension, demons have, that's their home dimension. They're very substantial. I mean, they're just like you or me, as far as totally there. The second dimension, the energy is somewhat different than the third dimension and the second dimension. Demons are visible to all the citizens, denizens of the second dimension, but they don't have the same solidness that they do in the third dimension. And in here in the first dimension, they have no visibility or solidness at all to most people.
Okay, so when they're on or in our existence, they represent themselves as people.
Well, they represent themselves. So sometimes they do, yeah, but not always. So sometimes like they could be like Ugar, who could be, you know, just this ugly brute with pus coming out of pustules on his face. But for the most part, if you were to actually see a demon, you would know them right off just by their odd dress. Yeah. So they might look like a normal human, but they would not be dressed like even the wildest human would dress normally, with a few exceptions like the accountant type or the corporate type. But for the most part, whether they were old, young, middle-aged, they're going to dress extremely eccentrically.
Okay. And you say that you've got this ability to see them, which is obviously handy. So how do you know when you're looking at one, other than obviously a guy walking around in suspenders and Speedos? How do you know?
Well, if you were to see a normal person that you thought was a normal person but was actually a demon, one of the things that my first best-selling book back in 2012 was Auras, How to See, Feel, and Know. And that book talks about my life experience. I've been seeing auras since I was a small child in full Technicolor. And a demon aura has a gray band that's very distinctive. There's no human, natural human aura that has that gray band. And so that's a very good tell right away. If you see someone that seems like they're acting strange, they may be a demon or they may be inhabited by a demon. By the way, the demons, they don't use the word possession. That's very common on our planet. They use the word inhabited. So if they're going, and people are called Isbos. So if they want to inhabit an Isbo, that's what it's called, not possessing a human.
Inhabit. So more like a parasite.
Very much like a parasite. The difference is that, first of all, demon inhabitation is not an easy thing for a demon to do. It's not something, like in the media, it's commonly shown as being something that's pretty easy to do. It's not easy to do. For a demon to inhabit a person, first of all, the person has to be in a very low space for one reason or another. And the demon, who has a very different aura, I just mentioned the gray band that's around their aura, their energy is extremely different than humans under normal conditions. But if a human gets into a low space, if an Isbo gets into a low space, then the demon will be able to try to go in and momentarily match their auric energy to that of the human. And if they can succeed in doing that, which is not an easy thing for a demon to do, then they can actually inhabit that person. Now, why would they want to do that? Well, for one thing, demons cannot, they don't have the ability to feel anything. So they can't taste food. They can't have any kind of physical pleasure. So they're basically cast out into an eternity of not being able to do that, unless they inhabit a being that can do that. So if they inhabit a human, now they can taste food. Now they can experience sexual pleasure. So all these things that they normally couldn't do. So there's a great incentive from that standpoint alone for a demon to inhabit someone. But they have a greater design than that. Yes, they want to be able to feel all those pleasures from food to sex to whatever, but they also want to basically hurt that human and any other humans they can, because the you and I and any other human have something that they never will have, and that's that physical body that can do these wonderful things and feel these wonderful feelings. So they want to do anything they can to make that person, to convince that person to debase their body, to abuse their body, to extreme use of alcohol or drugs, to be extremely promiscuous in their sex, having sex with whoever and catching whatever. That's going to make a demon super happy. Great, do that even more. It makes they get to feel it and they get to debase the humans. So they're very happy with that.
Mm. So I'm describing, maybe I've got a demon in me somewhere. But I mean,
well, the other way you'd know if you have a demon in you is that they have, once they want to hurt the person that they are inhabiting, but they also want to hurt other people too through that person. So if you're a person that purposely goes out and does things to hurt other people, yeah, that's pretty demonic as far as a inhabitation. But if it just happens, you know, as the normal course of life, that's different. But you know, I'm sure you've known people who they make it their mission to get in arguments. They make it their mission to bother people, to aggravate people, to hurt people.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say about the aura thing. It's like pretty much everybody's been in a situation where they get it is a feeling. So you walk into, I've done it before, where I've walked into a pub, a bar here, where you just get a strange, you just clock somebody in the room and you just get a strange feeling from you. You just automatically know you're going to have trouble with this person as the night wears on. I don't know if it's a sixth sense or whatever, but, and then invariably later on in the night, this guy will start a fight or, you know, with you. And you just know it as soon as you walk in the bar. It's like, I'm not saying he's a demon every time, but there's something sinister lurking behind this guy's aura, you know? And I'm sure many people have had that same feeling. Or another example is like when something happens, say somebody gets hit or murdered or whatever it is, the person that's caused that, normally people will say, "You never liked that guy. You know, I never liked that guy. There's something off about him." Do you know? So I think that's what you're describing, but maybe these people are possessed with something or inhabited, as we say. And maybe, I don't know, what would you say the cycle is? I mean, say someone's inhabited on, say they've got a bit of mental illness and the demon wants to go in there because it thinks it can, you know, manipulate that person to its ends. What would you say the life cycle of a demon is in a person? I mean, is this something that can go on forever, or do they normally meet the demise pretty soon after?
Well, that's an interesting question. Demons actually choose their victims based upon questions like that they ask themselves. Obviously, because they're getting physical pleasure out of being in the human body, they'd like it to last as long as possible. But at the same time, they cause it to do abusive things like drug abuse or other things that they're gonna do that are gonna end their life earlier, earlier than normal. And so there is that balance for demons themselves. But what I should, before we even answer that question, I should make a distinction between demon inhabitation and demon influence. Because demon inhabitation, as I said, is actually a very difficult thing. It's not common, it's rare. And demon influence, on the other hand, is extremely common. And the difference is that if that old picture of the little demon sitting on your shoulder, a little devil sitting on your shoulder, whispering in your ear, trying to get you to do things that aren't good for you, that would be demon influence. And demons do that all the time, every day, with people all over the place. And that influence can cause that person, they're always thinking, well, maybe I should do this. And they don't make good choices in their life. And they go down paths that are destructive to them and maybe to the small group of people that are right around them and their immediate family, but not beyond that. But if someone's demon inhabited, that's different, because now the demon still wants to get all the pleasures out of the person, but they also want to hurt a much wider field of people. So when demons choose to inhabit someone, first of all, if they're even successful at that, they're going to want to inhabit someone who has an influence over a larger number of people as much as possible. So the more influence someone has, the more people they can hurt through that person in some way, destroy their lives, their finances, ruin their job. That's going to be the type of person that the demon's going to want to inhabit. Now, what happens when someone gets inhabited? You just mentioned mental illness, and that's a very good thing to mention, because the signs of both demon influence and demon inhabitation are often similar to the signs of mental illness. And one of the distinctions is, if someone has mental illness and they have all these different symptoms, then that's going to normally have transpired over a period of time. So over a period of time, they became more and more mentally ill. On the other hand, if someone gets inhabited by a demon, that happens oftentimes even just in an overnight period. One day they're perfectly normal, and the next day they just wake up as this amazingly crazy person, and they never get back to being normal again. That would be a really good sign of demon inhabitation rather than mental illness, even though the symptoms might appear similar on the outside.
Yeah, so I can just can be like an overnight thing. So obviously they're coming here to do this, and you know, you've outlined they're doing it for their pleasure. So if somebody knows they've got a demon inside, then how are you able to remove that? I mean, is that possible?
Yes, absolutely, for most instances. But I should say that, again, going back to your traditional media accounts or even the traditional way that it is done sometimes, where people will feel that someone's inhabited or possessed by a demon, and they will call in their local priest or some supposedly professional person to get rid of the demon. And oftentimes those type of things end very badly. You can go all the way back to the times of when they were burning witches at the stake. And oftentimes they said, this person was inhabited by or possessed by a demon, and we're going to burn them at the stake. Well, that's so funny, because burning them at the stake isn't going to, it may kill the person, but it's not going to kill the demon. And the demon will just go be inhabit somebody else. So, and the people who are actually doing the burning and the torturing, those people are probably more inhabited by a demon than the person that they were torturing or killing. But even today, you can, if you go on the internet and just look up demon exorcisms gone wrong, something like that, and you'll read accounts of there's many of them on the internet that are stories of our time where people were assumed to be inhabited, possessed by a demon, and supposedly the minister, the priest, the professional exorciser, I can't even say that word, comes in and tries to get rid of the demon, and they end up severely hurting the person or even killing the person in their attempt to do that. So you get a lot of people who think they know what they're doing there, and they don't, and they end up hurting the person more than helping them. Sometimes the problem is they really do have mental illness. So before they try to get a demon out of them, take them to a psychiatrist, not a psychologist, a psychiatrist. And the reason you go to a psychiatrist rather than a psychologist is the psychiatrist is actually an MD. So if there's a cause of someone's symptoms that are physical, like maybe their hormones are off, the psychiatrist can prescribe things to balance their hormones and take care of that problem, where a psychologist can't do that. They're not an MD. They can't deal in that world. But in any case, oftentimes when people think yeah, this person's demon in habit, especially if they have a religious background. That's their first thought. And that's not the case. They really just do have mental illness. But if they actually are demon inhabited, there are things that they can do. Now, there's 13 levels of demons. We should bring that up because that's an important point. So there's the lower level demons, which are, say, level 1 through 5. And then there's the mid-level demons, say 6 through 11. And then the higher level demons, 12 and 13. And the way that those demons act is extremely different. Most of your inhabitations, your possessions are going to be from your mid-level demons simply because they have the experience, and the lower level demons simply they don't have the ability. They're not good at it. They can't balance their aura enough to the humans to be able to inhabit them. It takes a lot of practice for a demon to do that. But anyway, to get rid of demons, if someone suspects they have a demon and it's a low to mid-level demon, which most of them are, demons hate harmony. They love disharmony. So the more you can create harmony in that person's life, or if it's the person themselves that they can create in their own life, then the more successful they are going to be at getting rid of the demon, probably pretty quickly. So for instance, if things that you can do to create harmony, don't watch or read horror stories or stories of violence or war. Don't do anything like that that's disharmonious to your own energy. And you can feel it. You may say, I really love horror movies. Well, you may really love horror movies, but you still feel that tension and anxiety inside you when you're watching the movie. Well, demons love that tension and anxiety. So don't do things that create that. And so if you normally listen to heavy metal rock, turn that heavy metal rock off. Listen to some gentle, nice, peaceful music of your choice, but peaceful, not something that's disrupting to your energy. So if you can do things to balance your own energy, Sonny, parent wants to be in the conversation. If you can do something to balance your own energy, you have the 7 energy centers in your body, and one or more of them can get really out of balance. And if you have disharmonious things around you, maybe your wife or girlfriend or husband is always arguing with you, or maybe you have problems at work that are just, you know, just drive you crazy and cause a lot of tension. You're always under the gun, always under pressure to get something done in a certain time frame. Maybe you have problems with your friends. Maybe you just do things on your own choices, like we mentioned the music, that are very disruptive. You got to change those habits for that person, or if you yourself, to make your life momentarily, at least, very harmonious. Let those energy centers just calm down and expand out. And if you do that, the demon will, and if it's a lower or mid-level demon, will leave. Unless it's an upper mid-level demon, they'll probably be more resistant to that. But if it's just a normal low-level or lower mid-level demon, they can't stand that. There's so many other people out there who will be more enjoyable prey than a person who has a harmonious aura. So just do what you need to do. It could be aromas. It could be sound. It could be, is your home light, or do you have all the blinds down? It's always dark. So the more you can do to be out in the sun, be in the light, make your home light, make the sounds harmonious, make the smells harmonious. What do you like to smell for essential oils? What are your favorite food smells? Those things that make you feel good and happy. Balance your aura, balance your energy centers. Most demons, if you are inhabited, or even being influenced, and you're not inhabited, you're just being influenced, that little devil's going to leave your shoulder and go find someone who's going to be a lot more enjoyable to be around than you.
Yeah. So on the physical side of things, then what we can do, you've mentioned smells there. Is there anything like, I know in certain cultures they used to put like salt down or something like that, you know, like a sulfury site of, you know, something just to keep things out, or maybe even wear like a talisman or something. So, or even to some extent tattoos, you know, some sort of endowment. So is that do anything for this situation?
It can. I have another book I wrote years ago. It was another bestseller, Psychic Self-Defense. And it outlines many things that you can do for different situations, from psychic attacks to demonic attacks to magical attacks. Salt, you mentioned, is one that is useful for keeping out a lot of negative influences. If someone puts a perimeter of salt around the room that they stay in a lot, it doesn't work for higher level demons or even upper level demons, but it does work for a lot of things that you might want to keep out. I don't know why they don't like salt, but they don't. The talked about tattoos. So tattoos I would classify as sigils or symbols, and the symbol by themselves on demons has really no effect if it's just the symbol. And most of the other things that people would have that are jewelry or crystals or things like that are not gonna affect a demon if they're just a crystal or just a piece of jewelry, even if it's a wonderful design that, you know, in ancient days, this was the design you used to ward off demons. The reality is it doesn't ward off demons, but you can enchant those type of items. I do that, other people do that, where if it's imbued with a magical energy specifically to get rid of demons or to repel demons, then it can have an effect, especially on, again, the lower level demons.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this conversation before in the past with people about this, because people say, a priest, you know, shows a cross, for instance, a crucifix to a demon, and they don't like that, and they get hung up on this this image of why would it be bothered about a crucifix? And I say, no, it's not the crucifix. It's the, like you said, it's the essence that you've put into that crucifix, the energy, the thought process that's gone into this. In your belief, when you're using the crucifix, you're putting all this, we won't call it magic, but this power into this object, and it's the power from the object that's the demons of, you know, resistant against, not the fact that it's a piece of wood. You know what I mean? It's the power that you're instilling on this object. I think that's kind of where you're going with that.
Well, that is actually true. Yes, that what you said is very accurate, and it wouldn't have to be just a cross. Any kind of religious symbol that people believe in, that they have that faith in. If they're in that religious life, that can be very helpful. In fact, when we're talking about things to harmoniously balance your aura and to drive away demons, religion can certainly be one of those. And it doesn't matter what religion it is. Someone could be a Christian. They could be a Jewish person. They could be a Muslim. It doesn't really matter what their religion is. The fact is, if it's a good religion and it's teaching people to be good people, it's teaching them to have good character traits and to follow the golden rule, to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If it's teaching good things and it's supportive of their members, whatever religion it is, that's going to be a religion that demons don't want to be anywhere around. So a person who might be demon inhabited or being heavily demon influenced, even if they're not religious, and even if they have never even stepped foot inside a church or a mosque or a synagogue, if they go to that church or that church or that synagogue or that mosque, and they spend some time around people who are supportive, even if they don't believe what those people believe, but they're in that supportive atmosphere, that religious supportive atmosphere, that will drive demons away. They don't like that. And so anything that's associated with that energy of religion drives demons away. They don't like it. Yeah. And so those are certainly something that you can use.
Mm-hmm. What about this then? Because people say, and we were talking before we started about shadow men, and they tend to come to people when they're sleeping. So there's something going on there where they're interested in us sleeping. But this, you know, this notion of when we're asleep, we can sort of astral travel, almost into another dimension. You spoke about dimensions before. I mean, is this something where people have ever encountered these things when they're asleep?
Oh, that's a great question. Yes, that when you dream or when you're sleeping, that is such a great question. It opens up a whole another line of talk. We think right now you and I are in our what I call our day self, but we have a night self too. And where our day self is very constrained by everything around us that's physical, our night self is completely unconstrained. It cannot be injured. You can travel with the speed of thought to any place in the universe you want to go in your night self. In fact, It's something we do at my home that's quite fun. We'll say, where do we want to go tonight? And we'll pick a place that we've been to. Well, let's go to Corbulus, a planet that's just full of flowers. Or let's go to another planet that has volcanoes. And we go volcano hopping because our night self can't be hurt. So let's go to the edge of the volcano. It's erupting, jump inside it, get blown up with it. And that's fun for the night self because the night self can experience that but not experience any pain from it. But in any case, the other downside of your night travels is your night self, because it can go and do anything and it goes to strange places and sees strange things that your day self can't even imagine. And so, but your day self, you're recording these things that the night self is seeing and doing, and you're trying to interpret, what am I seeing? And so the images that can come out in people's dreams are radically sometimes different than what the night self is actually seeing. It's just the day self trying to interpret it. But you're also very vulnerable in your dreams, because when you're awake and you're in your day self, you have your protective walls up. If you see a person who you can sense that they're a dangerous person or might be a threat, you put a wall up. If you have someone who's trying to con you or sell you something and you don't and you can sense it, you put a wall up. If you've been hurt romantically and someone comes up and tries to make romantic overtures to you, you put a wall up and you don't just let them right in because you've been hurt in the past. So, but in your night travels, in your night self, all of those walls are gone. And so you do things in your night travels and you dream things in your dreams that you would never imagine doing in your physical self. Not just cool things like adventures and stuff, but even things like, you know, have wild sex orgies or something that your day self would never do. Maybe so, and this could be a particular problem for people who are really religious and they have very strict religion they live by. But then when they go dream, they dream these highly sexual dreams that are completely opposite of things that they would do in their day self life, because you don't have those constraints and restrictions in your night travels. So you're open at that time to things you mentioned, the shadow man or demonic influence. Demons love to try to get people influenced while they're in their night self dreaming, because they know all the walls are down. Where they might have some resistance to them in the day, they have no resistance to them at the night. And so that is definitely a prime time for intruders of different types to try to come in and have some influence on you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if there's anything you can do to protect yourself when you're asleep, then. I mean, is this not letting your body get too run down, so you're slightly alert, or?
There is something you can do to protect yourself, and that's to become a lucid dreamer. Mm. That's a huge one, and you can have a lot more enjoyable and educational and helpful dreams once you begin lucid dreaming. Every single person can lucid dream, and you can train yourself to lucid dream. There are some excellent books out that you can get. In the back of my book, Demon Hunter, I mentioned a couple books to help people lucid dream, because that is a very useful skill to develop. And it starts with having very vivid dreams. So you may not be lucid dreaming yet, so there's a distinction between vivid and lucid. And so if you have a very vivid dream, these may be dreams that are so real to you that you wake up in the middle of the night after the dream because it was just so real. And maybe something happened to it, like you fell off a cliff, and as you fell off the cliff, you woke up. That's a vivid dream. A lucid dream is where you can actually have conscious control of the dream. And that's where your day self begins to interface with your night self in a way it normally doesn't, so that your day self has some actual control over what the night self is doing and seeing. And so, for instance, a dream I had years ago, that I always remember because it's one of my first lucid dreams, and it's a silly dream, but it was, I was in a, like a European, old European town, and it had a fountain in the center of the square, and I was just walking along, and these two bad guys on the other side of the square started shooting at me with submachine guns, and so I had a little pistol that came out of my hand, I'm hiding behind the fountain, and these guys are shooting at me, and I said, wait a minute, I need a bigger gun. So right away, I had a bazooka in my hand. And so that was the end of those two guys on the other side. So that was the difference. In the lucid dream, you can consciously decide what happens in your dream. You can consciously make things appear like a bazooka instead of a pistol. You can make these two guys just vanish over there, whatever you want. So once you have that ability to lucid dream, you're now interfacing your day self and your night self in a way that they normally don't interface. And once you have that control, you're, if any demon comes in and tries to bother you, if any shadow pick, any of those things, you have control now because your day self is interfacing with your night self. And that's really the secret if someone wants to be able to counteract those problems on their own.
Hmm. So just being open to the idea, being aware of this as a possibility, that actually in some way protects you.
If you're aware of it, yes, that does give you some, it's like a warning sign, so it's your caution. But if you're in the dream state, it doesn't mean anything unless you can lucid dream. Because if you're in a dream state and you're not lucid dreaming, you're not in control of your dream, then there are no walls up. There's nothing to protect you in your dream state except lucid dreaming.
Yeah. Can you give me an example of, when someone's having a demon removed, are you able to see the demon? I mean, what happens in that situation? How do you know when they've actually...
If someone was actually coming in and removing a demon from someone you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, going back to our earlier conversation, most people who try to do that really don't know what they're doing, and they actually do things that are physically hurtful to the person that they're supposedly trying to get the demon out of. There are techniques that the only people I know that have the ability to do that and do it in a non-harmful way to the person is there are Catholic priests that are specifically trained. It's not a common thing, but they are specifically trained for that skill. And I have heard reports that they're successful in their endeavors. And also the Church of Celestine Light trains their priesthood for that as well. But other than those two examples, I don't know of any examples of people that are truly able to get demons out of people that, other than the way I already mentioned, if you make their aura harmonious and balanced, that's going to get demons out of most people. The only exception, if it's a higher level, upper level demon, then that may not work and you may need to get professional assistance. And I would recommend either a Catholic priest that has been specifically trained for that, not a normal Catholic priest, one that's actually, they actually have a school for that, and very few priests go to it. But if they have been specifically trained and have the experience, or the Church of Celestine Light priesthood, any of those two, I can't really recommend any others than that.
Interesting. Well, you know, like I say, it has been interesting. So do you want to tell people how they can get a hold of you and obviously how they can get a book?
Well, they can go to my website if they want to get a hold of me, which is very easy, embroswyn.com, embroswyn.com, embroswyn.com. And on that website, they can see all the different services I offer. I have over 26 published books, most of them in the paranormal, psychic, and magic area. They can see those. Those books are available at bookstores around the world. You can go into your local bookstore and wherever you live, and they don't carry the book you want, they can order it for you. And my book coming out next, Demon Hunter, is 520 pages, and it covers a lot more ground than we were able to cover today. Maybe we can do this again another time to talk more about that. The Demon Hunter will be coming out on May 18th. It's in pre-publication right now. People can go on Amazon and pre-order it, the Kindle version. And if you pre-order the Kindle version before the public release on May 18th, then it's only 99 cents. But after May 18th, the Kindle version will be $7.99 US dollars.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think I'll get you back on to maybe give us some examples of what's in the book, you know. Just as an example. So yeah, I might do that. That'd be interesting. But again, thank you very much for joining me tonight. It's been a pleasure.
Lee, it's been a pleasure for me as well. Hope to see you again.
Yeah. And what's the parrots called before we go?
This is Sunny, and the one in the background, this is Sunny, who's a blue and gold macaw, and in the background is Sundance, who's a scarlet macaw.
Nice. They weren't too much trouble, to be fair, were they?
No, they were good. Sonny wanted to be in on the show.
Yeah, but enjoy the rest of your day.
You as well. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you very much, Matty. And I'll be in touch.
All right. Look forward to it.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, so there you go. I hope you found that very interesting. If you want to get hold of him, or you want to get hold of a copy of the book, and say it's not out till May, and we will be having him back on to talk about the book just before it comes out, it's ambrosewin.com. I will leave the links in the show notes. That's the best thing to do. Right, housekeeping before we go. Just want to say a big, big thank you to everybody, or the few hundred people that came across to have a listen to my new podcast, When Cryptids Call. You know, the feedback I've got has been pretty good, to be fair. I mean, 5-star reviews and that, so there's only a couple of episodes out. You know, Collins, the first episode, he talks about bumping into a dogman and that. Fascinating story. Even the papers picked up on it and published an article, because it is an interesting story, it really is. So if you haven't had a chance to check it out, go across there, When Cryptids Call. And if you can, if you want to support the show, you know, please share the shows on your socials and anywhere you can. If you've got, you know, that's for Realm and When Cryptids Call. So, you know, that helps us massively. I said it before and I say it again, but podcasts really do thrive on word of mouth more than anything else. So if you can get it out there for us, you know, that is a way to support the show. And it means, you know, a great deal to us, because it's something we can't do. So yeah, that being said, I think that's it in the way of housekeeping, other than, you know, like I think I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we will get these shows out to you as soon as we can. Everything is up in the air at the minute, but you know, we're trying, we're here, we're still trying, and we want to get the shows out, so there is things in the pipeline, believe me. But if you haven't checked it out already, go across to When Cryptids Call. You should be able to find it now on most podcast players. Obviously in the early days, it, you know, takes a while for them to get on board, but it should be there now. So if you haven't checked it out, please check it out and let me know what you think. You can contact me at supernaturalpod@gmail.com. You can contact me at, and if you've got a story, obviously, let me know. You can contact me at whencryptidscalled@gmail.com, or obviously Facebook. Go across to Realm of the Supernatural podcast on Facebook. Join us and you can message me there. You can direct message me there, or Finch. So, you know, we look forward to hearing from you. That being said, a fantastic week, and we will see you on the other side.
Well, they've gone. No, just for now. It wasn't the right time for us to meet. But there'll be other nights, other stars for us to watch. They'll be back.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.